Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Friday, March 15, 2019. President Salva Kiir travels to Rome to meet Pope Francis.
This is a very, very crucial opportunity. The invitation came from Pope, you know, and it will avail the president the opportunity to talk to Pope and seek Pope influence on this, to influence donors to support.
Security forces arrest students from University of Juba.
We are being arrested, five of us, Mr. Philip of CIS, and then Mr. William Wilson, ANC and SPLM, you know, student league, you know, respectively. And then Mr. Elia of Modern, you know, Southern Front. These, you know, four individuals.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir traveled this afternoon to Rome to meet with Pope Francis. The presidential spokesman says Mr. Kiir will brief Pope Francis on the progress of the revitalized peace deal and says the Kiir administration hopes the Pope will encourage international donors to support the implementation of the September peace deal. Winnie Chirino reports for VOA from Juba.
Presidential spokesman Atenyu Wekatain says President Kiir will meet with the pontiff on Saturday.
The president will be meeting the Pope tomorrow on one-to-one. They will be discussing the revitalized peace agreement or a solution of conflict, how far the implementation has gone, and what the Republic of South Sudan needed from Pope in an attempt to implement the revitalized peace agreement in the letter and the spirit.
Atain says Mr. Kiir, who is a staunch Catholic, is scheduled to attend Mass at St. Basilica the morning before he meets with Pope Francis. He says President Kiir will also meet with the Director of Food and Agriculture Organization in Rome to ask for support to feed the people of South Sudan.
You know, most of the country is affected by the failed rains last year. And therefore, it led into fail of the crops. The crop has failed last year, the cultivation has not yielded any fruits last year. So, in the side meeting with the FAO director, President Salva Kiir would be appealing to the FAO to help those who are actually, having a food deficit in some part of the country.
Atain says Pope Francis has appealed to South Sudan's warring parties before to end the conflict and is keenly aware of the efforts to make peace a reality in the country.
This is a very, very crucial opportunity. The invitation came from Pope, you know, and it will avail the president the opportunity to talk to Pope and seek Pope influence on this, to influence donors to support, because there's no other way South Sudan could return to normalcy without the implementation of the agreement we have on the table.
Atain says Kiir will return to Juba Sunday. South Sudan in Focus contacted the Vatican Embassy in South Sudan for a comment, but Monsignor Mark Kadima, the Church des Affairs of the embassy, declined to comment, saying the embassy is not allowed to speak publicly unless the interview questions are reviewed in advance at the Vatican headquarters. Pope Francis and the head of the Anglican Church, Archbishop Justin Welby, planned to visit South Sudan in 2017, but the trip was cancelled due to security concerns. The Vatican says Pope Francis had wanted to travel to South Sudan to promote peace after making a similar visit to the Central African Republic in 2015. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
South Sudan National Security and the police blocked students from the University of Juba from staging a protest today over a hike in tuition fee. The students say they had planned to march peacefully to the parliament to protest the fee hike, but were met with a heavy deployment of security who arrested five student leaders. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Juba.
The students claimed university administration officials increased the tuition fees for the academic year 2018 to 2019 from about 5,000 South Sudanese pounds to nearly 90,000 South Sudanese pounds, the equivalent of $350. The students attempted to peacefully protest the new fees and had asked the university administration to reverse the decision. Deng Bill William is the leader of People's Liberal Party at the University of Juba. He says the security operatives are tracking down student leaders on campus.
We are being arrested. Four of us are arrested already. Five of us, Mr. Philip of CIS, and then Mr. William Wilson, ANC and SPLM, student league, respectively. And then Mr. Elia of Modern Southern Front. These four individuals were taken this morning.
William says national security agents and police officers drove in armored vehicles and were deployed in and around the university campus just minutes before the students planned to march toward the national parliament.
We wanted to start this morning by mobilizing all the students on the campus and then, march to the parliament and to the office of head of chairman of committee of educational affairs in the PNLA, so that maybe we could, serve him with a petition demanding that, the decision that was taken is reversed. But then all the gates, all the campuses are surrounded, by the national security apparatus with their guns, with their, cars, waiting to arrest us.
Juma Madel Mamur, a third-year student at the University College of Economics, says the students are demanding the release of their colleagues.
We petitioned the administration on Monday, telling them that we will come back on Friday for the response. Before today morning, they siege all the campus, and then they prevent us from entering. We made sure that we entered inside. When we entered and we wanted to start, security came and pointed at some of us, and they arrested five of us.
One university official who spoke on condition of anonymity because he is not authorized to speak on behalf of the school's administration blamed the fee hike on South Sudan's economic crisis. He says the students should be protesting about skyrocketing market prices. Administrators at the University of Juba banned all political activities inside the campus ahead of Friday's march. Police spokesman Major General Daniel Justin Achor says the police deployed officers at the university to protect property and lives.
Our precautions is that to make sure that no damage happens in terms of materials, in terms of life and so on. So we deployed our police forces around the university, and we contacted the administration telling them we are here to assist you in case of anything. But to our understanding, the students themselves, they were very peaceful.
Achor denied that any students were arrested by the police. He also says students failed to notify police of their planned march.
Usually if they have something of that kind, it is our duty to provide them with security until we make sure that the marching to hand over their petition is peaceful, and we are to protect them until they reach the area they want to go to.
He says the police will stay on campus until the students and university administration resolve their conflict peacefully. Repeated attempts to contact University Vice Chancellor Professor John Akech for comment were unsuccessful as he was out of the office. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
At least 49 people were killed and more than 20 seriously wounded in shooting at two mosques in Christchurch, New Zealand. Three men and one woman are in custody. Neighboring Australia says the attacks were carried out by an extremist right-wing violent terrorist. From Sydney, VOA's Phil Mercer has this report.
Two mosques were attacked in Christchurch during Friday prayers, attended by hundreds of worshippers. A gunman allegedly live-streamed the assault on Facebook from a head-mounted camera. And the vision shows how victims were killed inside one of the mosques. Worshipper Ahmed Al Mahmoud told New Zealand Television how one of the attacks unfolded.
He would have the big gun and a lot of bullets, and he came through and he started shooting everyone in the mosque, everywhere. and they have to smash the door, you know, the glass, you know, from the window and from the door, there is a small door, smash it and to get everyone try to get out.
A 28-year-old man has been charged with murder. He's expected to appear in court Saturday. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison said the man arrested was an Australian citizen. Morrison described the suspected attacker as an extremist right-wing violent terrorist. Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern said it was one of New Zealand's darkest days. She went on to say that it was clear that this can now only be described as a terrorist attack. The New Zealand military has also defused explosive devices attached to a car. Authorities have advised all mosques in Christchurch to shut down until further notice. A lockdown on all schools in Christchurch has been lifted, but the city remains on high alert. Thursday's attacks are unprecedented in New Zealand, a country of 4.5 million people that prides itself on its social diversity. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Survivors of South Sudan's long conflict in Wau say they are still struggling with the trauma they have experienced from 4 years of civil war. At a training session organized by a Canadian-based non-profit, some victims of sexual violence say the training has helped them to move beyond memories of the abuses they experienced in Wau. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Wau Town.
A 32-year-old woman, whom we shall refer to as Sarah, to protect her privacy, says she was raped by 4 armed men in military uniform in December 2016 when she was going to the church in Wau. Speaking in Arabic after a 3-day training session organized by the group Women to Women, Sarah says the 4 men gang-raped her at gunpoint for more than 2 hours.
Since then, I have been discovered to have epilepsy and syphilis, and I have been suffering since that time up to now. The most dangerous now which I'm suffering from it is epilepsy. Now, I believe that this world is not safe because I've never expected to contact such diseases in my life.
Sarah says some health organizations gave her medicine to treat the syphilis, but she was told the epilepsy has no cure. She says she is unable to overcome the memories of the gang rape, but she is learning strategies to cope up with her condition at the training session. A 48-year-old Wau resident, who we are calling her Winnie to protect her privacy, says she was threatened at a gunpoint in June 2016 by men in uniform to surrender her belongings when she was fleeing the town to the nearby UN-run camp. Speaking in Arabic, Winnie says she was kicked and beaten by armed men in army uniform. She says now she hates all military personnel.
Whenever I see a military uniform, it reminds me those days, because what I know is that the army is formed to defend the country and protect citizens. But since they decided to kill citizens in South Sudan, it became a different story altogether. Why should I continue serving this country as a journalist? And at the end of the day, I'm not protected by my own army.
57-year-old Saida Abakar, who works at Women Union in Wau, says she was detained by the South Sudan National Security Service in 2016, along with dozens of other civil servants who refused to go to Raja of Loli State after President Salva Kiir's creation of 32 states. Speaking in Arabic, Abakar claims a national security official detained her without any arrest warrant.
We were confused because we had been taken by force to Raja, and our children were left behind. Our kids were crying because they do not know our fate. The situation was so horrific after spending 3 days in security detention. We were worried so much about our children.
Elizabeth Aluk Andrea, who heads the Canadian-based Women to Women organization, says herself was shocked to hear the stories of women in Wau. She says South Sudanese, especially women, need a national trauma healing program.
We have to accept this. There is something happened, something big, something bad, and we can't do the revenge. We have to find a way to forgive. to forgive ourselves, forgive others who made, you know, hurt us, in order to start a new life. We have to look for the future in a bright way.
Survivors of the atrocities committed during the 5 years of conflict say they find it hard to share openly about some of the traumatic experience they went through. More than 50 women were trained on how to handle trauma caused by war and how to help others who have endured similar experience. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a closer look at corruption in Angola. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the first thing you look for when you come home?
When I come back home, I see the people at home, if they are fine or not. And second thing, I see my mom, if they finish the work or not. If they want to sweep the room and everything, that if no any work, I just sit with my mom.
Yes, I first have to eat after, and then I see what exactly happened at home in my absence. Then after, I look into the book.
When I reach at home, I first to remove my clothes away and I'm looking for my food. Because I'm come there, I'm too hungry. I will look for my food and I eat and I take something to do.
Well, when I come back home from the school, the first thing I can remove out my clothes, then I look for the lunch, then after food, I can take rest for a while.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Angolans are expressing mixed views on whether or not President Joao Lourenco's effort to repatriate suspected funds will pay off for the struggling oil-rich economy. Lourenco announced an amnesty last year to those who bring back billions of dollars held illegally in foreign bank accounts. But while the president has been praised for crackdown on corruption, it's not clear how much, if any, of the money has come back to Angola. Elizabeth Casimiro has more for VOA from Luanda.
Luzia Bento is one of thousands of sheet vendors in Praça da Madeira, an unlicensed market about a half-hour drive from downtown Luanda. Shikuba's construction materials business has been struggling since the price of oil, Angola's biggest export, dropped 4 years ago. Angola has since faced a shortage of foreign currency, which has discouraged banks from lending to businesses like Shikuba's. The government of President João Lourenço has been seeking to inject money into the country with an amnesty for those who repatriate suspect funds. But Shikuba has doubts that the program will help, at least for businesses like hers. The stolen money is for the tycoons who stole it, she says. But if money really returns, it would be useful if the government helps more business owners with loans to refinance and develop. Lourenço, who was elected in 2017, says decades of corruption under Angola's former president, José Eduardo dos Santos, left billions missing from state coffers. The former president denies any looting during his 38 years in power. He fell out with Lourenço after the president's much-lauded anti-corruption drive targeted members of dos Santos' family. Angolan lawmakers last year backed Lourenço on giving amnesty for those who bring illegally transferred funds back into the country. But so far, there's been no announcements on returned money, despite some high-profile arrests and prosecutions. Critics like opposition UNITA party lawmaker Adalberto Costa Jr. says that raises doubts about the anti-corruption drive. He says it seems like this is a selective struggle. It is not a universal fight against corruption, says Jr. It seems like there are protected people and very calculated goals being pursued, he says. And a fight like this is not efficient. The Angolan Central Bank has cited billions of dollars over the years as having been illegally sent abroad, while tens of billions in government funds linked to Angola's state oil company Sonangol have disappeared. Lourenço sacked dos Santos' daughter, who was running Sonangol, and streamlined operations and regulations to encourage foreign investors. Lawyer Antonio Ventura is with the watchdog group Associação Paz, Justiça e Democracia. He notes it won't be so easy to eliminate systemic corruption and recover stolen funds after decades of exploitation. The process of recovering the money is not an easy task, he says. A lot of this money was put into financial assets, says Ventura, many of which are earning interest in foreign banks. However, he says, the fact that the Angolan Central Bank has made no announcement about how much it has recovered is an omission that indicates a violation of the right to inform citizens. U.S. officials on Tuesday praised Lourenço's anti-corruption efforts ahead of a visit at the end of the week by U.S. Deputy Secretary of State John Sullivan. U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs Tibor Nodge said they were delightfully surprised by the Angolan government under Lourenço.
We absolutely support his efforts to fight corruption. We know that there is a long way to go because that has been one of the perennial complaints from American investors. And as you know, one of our top line goals in Africa is to increase American trade and investment so that there's not just, a few investors going there.
Sullivan will meet with the Angolan president to discuss global security issues. He'll also meet with the business community to underscore the importance of expanding economic and trade ties between the U.S. and Angola. Elizabeth Casimiro for VOA News, Luanda.
From Luanda, we move to Malawi, where 200,000 people have been displaced by floods that have affected half of the country's 28 districts. The government has recorded at least 56 deaths and over 500 injuries as of Wednesday, where the experts have warned that more rain is on the way. Lamek Masina reports from Sanje, one of the districts hardest hit by the floods.
About 200,000 Malawians are in evacuation camps because of floods that have destroyed their houses, damaged roads, washed away bridges, and killed livestock. Weather experts say it was a result of a tropical cyclone that blew in from neighboring Mozambique. McDonald Clemens is among the flood's victims. He says it was at midnight while he was fast asleep when he was awakened by the sound of something falling down with a thud. He immediately woke others and found that it was a wall of their house and immediately found refuge at the chief's house until the following morning when they were told to stay at this camp. The rolling water which entered his house swallowed almost everything he had, but he managed to escape with his two children. He says they were now expecting well-wishers to provide them with food and blankets and arrange a place in the upperland where they can resettle. Malawi President Peter Mutharika has declared the 14 affected districts disaster areas and has made an urgent appeal for help. But the delivery of relief items that have started to trickle in is being hampered by flooded roads. Francis Kadzokoya is the disaster risk management officer.
Probably would want to, call upon our mother department, which is the Department of Disaster Management Affairs, under the Minister of Homeland Security, to actually help us with a helicopter so that it should be at least airlifting some of the relief items to the camps which cannot be accessed by road.
Meanwhile, community health workers have been deployed in camps to treat patients and advise people on practices that help prevent outbreaks of infectious diseases. Brown Makawi is a senior disease control surveillance officer in the Ministry of Health.
We are also treating minor ailments to under 5 children, like malaria, pneumonia, diarrhea, and eye infection. This is our main role.
Similar floods in southern Malawi 4 years ago killed 276 people and displaced 230,000 others. Kadzokoya says the government is now planning to start relocating people from flood-prone areas to higher ground.
And if we could manage actually to take them or move them to safer places, I think it would actually do away with the aftermath of these serious disasters like the one we experienced in 2015 and even this which we have just experienced in March 2019.
However, forecasters have warned another week of steady rain starting from March 14 in the parts of South and North Malawi. The rains are likely to cause more flooding. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Nsanje.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. President Salva Kiir flew to Rome today to meet with Pope Francis. The president's spokesman says Mr. Kiir will brief Pope Francis on the progress of the revitalized peace deal. He says the Kiir administration hopes the Pope will publicly encourage more international donors to support implementation of the September peace deal. Ateni Wekateni says President Kiir will meet with the pontiff on Saturday. And he says Kiir attended a mass at St. Basilica before meeting with Pope Francis. South Sudan National Security and Police blocked students from the University of Juba today from staging a protest over a hike in tuition fees. The students planned to peacefully march to Parliament to protest the hike, but were met with a heavy deployment of security who arrested five student leaders. The students claim university administration officials increased tuition fees from 5,000 South Sudanese pounds to nearly 90,000 pounds. And finally, survivors of South Sudan's conflict in Wau say they're still struggling with the trauma they've experienced from years of civil war. At a training session this week organized by the Canadian-based Women to Women group, victims of sexual violence say the training helped them move beyond memories of sexual assault that they experienced. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Friday. We now take you to Tonj with a song by some musicians from that area praising their leaders. We have been listening to a group of musicians singing, praising the leaders of Ural. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. If you would like us to know what you think about this show, our email is southsudan@voanews.com. Again, the email is southsudan@voanews.com. If you're planning to travel outside Juba Town where there are no VOA FM stations, you can still listen to us on shortwave. Our frequencies are 11850 kilohertz, 13865 kilohertz, and 15180 kilohertz. Have a peaceful weekend and join us again on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Banalia,